iMac podcast number 173, featuring David Cohen, Owen Rubin, Lee Givens, and me, Tim Robertson. Thanks for downloading.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And I'm Tim Robertson, the host of the MyMac.com podcast, joined like I am every week with by David Cohen. Hi, David.
Hi, Tim.
You know what? We had a great connection the whole time, and then right there when you come in, it drops out a little bit. Go figure, right?
What can you do?
What can you do? Also joined this week, once again, like last week, is Owen Rubin. Hello, Owen.
Hello there.
And we're not doing an interview this week, but we do have the same guest that we had last week as a co-host this week, Lee Givens. Hi, Lee.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
It was so fun to talk to you last week. I invited you back, and I'm glad you accepted.
This is great.
Cool beans. So we've been talking about off the air a lot about audio and video, and we thought that we were going to kind of have a show about that. But there was a little bit of Mac happenings this week. The big one probably is, I don't know what, the new MacBooks and MacBook Pros. Anybody tempted to go upgrade, Owen?
I've always been tempted to upgrade. I still want a smaller one, but I'm beginning to think I just may have to. Well, you know, I figured out how I can make Apple build a 12-inch.
Uh-oh.
I'll buy the 15.
Yeah, you're probably right. As soon as you buy the 15, they'll come out with a 12-inch MacBook Air.
It seems like if you guys want, tell me which machine you want to be upgraded really well, I'll go buy it. It was like a month after I bought my iMac G5, the new ones came out. You know, it's like.
Now, see, Lee being the Macintosh collector, he'll just buy all of them anyway, so it really doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, definitely. I don't mind, you know, an extra couple of. I still actually have my old PowerBook 2300C that I let the kids
use. You
have
a 2300, a Duo?
Yeah. Only problem is my Duo Dock is not working, so I have to break that open.
So here's a warning for you. Duo Docks go up in smoke, and they take the laptop, he said knowingly, which is what happened to my 270C. So
yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like the voice of experience.
I docked it, and there was this funny little buzz, and the magic smoke came out both the front and the back.
I haven't got the magic smoke yet.
Something inside the dock's power supply went AWOL, poof. And it took the laptop with it. So,
yeah, I got
to. Lee, what's.
Go ahead,
Ian. Cutoff between.
I'm sorry, say that again.
And a collectible again.
We're completely losing David Cohen. Can you hear me, David?
I'm still here.
Okay, I'm going to drop you and then I'm going to bring you back in.
Okay.
We're not going to. We could talk about him now. That's the fun part about Skype. Sometimes it's the connections are great, and other times not so great. You still there, David? Uh-oh. David is MIA.
How's this now?
Oh, that sounds better. A little bit better. So you were going to say something about collecting.
I'm still here. I was just watching to Leo. What's your cutoff point between, you know, what you would consider to be modern Macs that you wouldn't look to collect and keep, and then a vintage Mac that you do want to keep in your collection?
Well, my collection always started when I started collecting. I wanted to get everything I've ever used, any computer I ever, you know, used as a kid. And I started out with, you know, Apple IIc, Apple IIe. I even have a couple of Ataris. And then when I became a big a Mac guy, I just wanted to build out a collection that's kind of. A lot of people just don't understand that Apple's done a lot of things. You know, the MacBook Air is not their first sub notebook. You know, they built the whole Duo series and. They really thought about building docks.
Wait a minute, the PowerBook 100.
Yeah, built by Sony.
PowerBook 100. So just so you know, Lee, I was looking around. Sitting next to me is an Atari 800, an original Mac laptop, a PowerBook 100, a PowerBook 270, a G12, a G3 tower, a G4 tower, an iMac G5, and a Mac SE.
Wow.
And he's talking to us on a Windows machine.
SE 30. Yeah, SE 30. And they're all in this room, and the machine I'm on Skype on is a PC.
Go figure.
It's the only one the headphone plugs into. I got to get a USB headphone. That's the problem.
And every once in a while, I do collect like weird things. Like I have a 3COM Audrey. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
I have two of them. Yes.
So I have one of those next to my desk that I use as a conversation piece.
I don't know between
the Audrey. Anything USB that takes a lot of power.
Hey, David.
Your USB was awful.
Yeah.
I think what we need to do is get a tape measure for Lee and Owen.
No, I think between us, we have every Mac.
Just about. Yeah. Do you have a 20th anniversary, Owen?
I do not.
See, that's...
I've tried to buy one a couple times, but like you said, the prices on eBay are just way too high.
Yeah, I know it.
Do you remember that time when Apple was actually selling them back to the selling them to the employees for like, what was it, $1,999?
Yes.
Yeah, after they couldn't sell them for, I think it came out well over five figures.
Yeah, no, I think it was what, originally they said it was going to be $10,000.
Yeah.
Then they dropped it down to $7,500 almost immediately because everybody went, but I don't think so. And the funny thing is, at the time, it even wasn't the fastest Mac that they were selling. It was kind of the MacBook Air in its day, in that you're buying, the aesthetics. You're not buying the practicality of it.
So right now on eBay, there's one for $1,200.
Wow.
It has no bids. That's the starting bid. There's one for $181 that has 4 days left, and one for $200 that has no bids. It has 3 days left.
Yeah, but it's the condition. Is it the original? If you find an original that comes with, the pen set and the whole shebang, the
it
mouse
says,
pad and the
it says
rag,
the keyboard and the speaker.
Yeah, the speakers, the Bose speakers that it came with it, was very buggy. The bass.
Oh, it has the pen. It has the little leather holder for the CDs.
All you have to do is bid on it, and it can be yours.
Well, one thing I saw this week that was kind of interesting. Did you guys see the new in-box Apple IIc that sold for $2,600 off eBay?
Yeah, we were talking about that last week.
Yeah, I didn't know that the guy spent $2,600 on it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was one of my favorite unboxings.
How much he spent?
$2,600.
It was brand new in the box.
That was cheaper than it cost originally, though.
Yeah, well.
Well, he rationalizes by saying, if you use the if you look at the time value of money from back then till now, it's cheaper.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
That's someone that's not married.
He's actually using it as well. He's not.
Well, yeah, but
he's
how
not,
much
he's
are you really going
box.
To use it?
Yeah.
This says it's a mint condition in the original box and all software. One owner.
Well, I tell you, I got an original Mac, the 128K, I went to a friend's house. They weren't really my friend. They were a friend of a friend to help fix a washing machine, of all things. And I see this Macintosh box sitting there. It was just a white box with the Apple logo on it. And I asked, well, what's that? And they said, well, we had a garage sale a couple weeks ago, and that didn't sell. And I said, oh, so it's an old Mac. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, how much were you selling it for? She said, $100. I said, wow, really? She goes, yeah, I probably should have marked it a lot less. I said, well, I'll give you $20 for it right now, because that's what I was charging to fix their washing machine, which it was just a plug. It was clogged up, by the way. So I took that home. I got it home, opened it. It was the original Mac. It had all the manuals. It had the cassette tape tutorials.
No way.
It had all the discs. Everything was there. I washed it with the sponge, the original Macintosh, the 128K.
Oh my God, those are rare too.
And I got another 128K like 2 months later. My wife loves garage sales. I don't know, do they call them garage sales where you live, Owen? I know a lot of different places. Okay.
Yeah, garbage sales.
Garbage sales is more like it. I hate going to those things. For some reason, my wife loves them.
I love them too, actually.
I went up to one with her, and they had an original Mac 128K that was written on with magic marker all over it. I gave them $5 for it, brought it home. They have this thing now called the Magic Eraser. I don't know if you guys have seen this.
I use it all the time. I got two little kids.
God, those things, it took off the markers perfectly. It looks like a brand new machine.
Here you go, Tim. I'll make you feel comfortable then.
Yeah, I know that sound well. I know that sound very well.
That was my SE booting up. So
the only other garage sale I've ever been to, where I bought some old Macs. We had stopped at this house, and it turned out to be at the time my oldest daughter's music teacher, and he had all these Mac Classics and Mac Pluses sitting there, like I don't know, six or seven of them. selling them. All kinds of keyboards, a whole bunch of software. I bought the whole shebang off him for like $30.
And, it's really funny what people will pay. I had a stack of 520Cs and 540C laptops. And I got, when I left Pacific Bell and they closed down my division there, everybody in my group was on Macs. And Pacific Bell said, we don't want Macs. Can have them. They just basically take them. And most of them have been trashed by people who had used them for
sure.
So I kind of Franken-Mac'd together about 10 good ones, and they all came with like SCSI Ethernet connectors. I don't even remember those. There was no Ethernet. So you plugged it into the SCSI port on the back, and then you got Ethernet. And I sold them up for an average price of about $240 each on eBay.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
you know, I packed them up for software and stuff, but...
Yeah, I remember it was HDI 30. Back when I was an IT guy, I remember my vice president, you know, all the VPs back then got a 540C. And I think it was $5,200 back then.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, he just retired from Oak Ridge National Lab. And he's like, I'm not a big computer person. He goes, you go ahead and use it. And I was like, hey, that's nice.
Yeah, do you have free.
Do you have one?
I don't have a 540C. I'm still looking for one. So after you
talk about it, I might be able to help you with that. I'll go look and see if I still have one. I might still have one sitting.
Wow.
I'm just looking at the stack on the back here. What's in that stack there? You want a 5300? I have one of those sitting over here.
No, I have a 5300 and a 265C.
No. I don't have a 540 there, but I'll go look. I might still have one 540 left.
Wasn't the 5300 the one that the hinge would break all the time really easily?
Yes, this one was repaired by Apple. It broke like crazy. It was the first PowerPC laptop.
Yep. Yeah, that was 601.
That was the one on Independence Day.
Yes.
Is that right? Yes, oh, okay.
Jeff Goldblum used.
Although the screen wasn't really a Mac, was it, when they were doing it? I think they just put video over there.
Oh, yeah,
sitting in the back of the room, I just unburied a 180C as well back there. So.
Well, I think you guys should get together and start a Mac museum in a
physical location. No, I'm going to send
all these. Location.
I'm just going to send them all to you at one point, then I can come visit them when I need to.
Yeah, there you go. Come say hi.
Out of the house, you know. It's like I'm looking at how many are in this room as I'm sitting here getting scared. There's a 2FX on the floor running
a 2FX.
It actually runs. It runs AUX.
Wow.
There's
you know what? You know what I'm looking for? You remember the old first Apple server, the Apple Network server, the ANS 700?
It was
the big square thing on wheels.
Yep.
Yes. I just gave away my 9500.
Oh, I just picked one of those up.
Maybe you got it. I gave it away to some guy who really wanted it, and I said, you can have it. It didn't work. Unfortunately, the problem – do you remember the 9500? Tim, I don't know if you ever played with one of those.
Yep, I sure have.
But it had this very long SCSI cable
that
kind of wrapped around on the inside, and it broke very easily because there was all these sharp edges it went around.
Yep. Well, those machines are notorious. If you had to crack one open, you remember how difficult it was to put memory in those machines? Ugh.
You had to take it all apart to get to the – so the board was visible when you opened the machine, except for the part where the memory went.
Yep.
And that was under the power supply.
And everything in that was just razor sharp.
Oh my God! I had stitches in my finger picking up an old Mac because I reached around it to lift it up, and I got my finger inside where the new bus cards went.
Mm.
And I was working for this research firm at the time, and I pulled my hand away, and it's like gushing blood, and they had to rush me over to the hospital for multiple stitches. And the guy said, "How did you do that?" I said, "I picked up a computer." It's like he just looked at me like I was crazy. Do those little plastic doors? Put them back in. It's man, that was nasty.
I still think the easiest Mac to upgrade of all time is the G3 and the G4. Open up that side door, drop it down, and everything was right there. I love those machines to upgrade as an IT person.
I have the silver, the kind of bluish silver one. Is that the one you're talking about? It's kind of grayish.
Yes.
Yeah, the
yes.
G4. Yeah.
That's the one that's at my feet right now. It's a G4 tower, right? You're right. You lift it up and laid it aside, and it was really nice. I agree with you.
I just repurposed go ahead, David.
Sorry about that.
I was going to say, I have one of those, and it does. Actually, and I was they're so easy to work on, but what I think what's gone on mine is the power supply. And actually buying a new power supply cost a fortune over here. I ended up just going out and onto eBay and buying another cheap 400 megahertz machine to use as a donor machine to try and get my other one back, because it was cheaper to buy a whole new G4 machine than it was to buy a power supply separately.
I just repurposed a dual processor G4, dual processor 500 megahertz to a brother-in-law who always wanted a Mac but never had one, so I figured he just wanted to play with iMovie and stuff like that. And even the G4 dual processor 500 with iMovie was plenty fast enough to edit video on, so it was kind of nice to get someone in the Mac and for my wife to get another one of the machines that's in the house all over the place out of here.
Well, I remember when I first got this G4, how fast it really felt.
It did.
I mean, it screamed. And it's still, I actually turn, it sits on my, it's sitting under my desk. I don't use it all the time. But every once in a while, it actually still has Classic on it, so I still use it for that.
Yeah.
Well, if you actually boot up in Classic, you know, don't boot the Mac OS 10 on it. Just run like 9.2. It's a fast machine.
That's right. It's set to run Classic.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I remember when I first saw, I don't know if you guys remember the old the Power Macintosh G3. It was still with the beige case.
Sure.
That's it. That's sitting right behind it, by the way.
Yeah, that's the first G3.
Yeah, when I was on the Apple campus and it was during what we call Geek Week, where they brought all the SEs out to Cupertino to learn about the new products. And yeah, I think the chip was codenamed Arthur back then. And they pulled it out, and I just blew my mind how fast that went. I remember
it
got over
the blue buttons. That's the one with the kind of the blue plastic buttons.
Yeah. No, wait.
Oh,
this was
the one I have.
This was all.
It looked like the 9500, kinda.
It was all beige.
The one I have is beige, right? And it kind of has a big tower. It looks like a little tower stuck to the edge of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. It was the first machine to hint at color, because the button that opened the door on the side was kind of a green. I mean, I'm looking at a translucent green color that was sort of the color of the first iMac kind of thing. It was a very strange thing to see color appear in a Mac machine.
You're totally right.
Yeah. And I'm just looking at it right now, smiling about it. The reason that one's there, it's the last machine I have that supports a floppy.
Well, without buying a USB external floppy. I mean, you could still buy those, too.
Well, that used to run a camera video server, believe it or not. It was a piece of software from a guy here in Alameda that you can plug all these webcams into it, and then it broadcasts them over the Internet.
Hmm.
And it only ran to that point. I haven't upgraded it to the newest software because it was too expensive.
So this show's kind of developed into this old Mac show at
this old Mac
at the 17 and a half minute mark. But it's funny, you get a few people together that have older machines and have a passion for the Macintosh, and it's very easy to kind of drop into that conversation. And I'm sure a lot of people listening is really into it, and there's other people going, I just bought my Mac 2 years ago. I have no idea what they're talking about. But it's kind of funny that there is such a rich history out there that it's kind of nice to share this information with these new Mac users that have no idea how far back this platform really does go.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, if you pick up, you can pick up one of these old machines for very little on eBay. And, you know, if your requirements are fairly limited, they're still useful today. I mean, you know, you really make them fly.
I wonder how much it would really cost to get the vast majority of every Mac built out there and to set up a museum. I bet it would cost less than $10,000 to get the majority of the machines.
If you didn't take anything new, right?
Right. Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, you're not going to get a super collector, you know, Quadra 650 that's still in the box for, I don't know. I just threw away a Quadra 750 or 950. I forget now.
I just gave away a ton of those. The 6100s I gave away. The Quadras, I had a Quadra 840, which I thought was AV, which I thought was one of my, if people ask me, one of my favorite machines. That was one of my favorite machines in that era.
Yeah, I think if a lot of people remember, that actually had the dual processor, had the DSP inside.
Yes, it had DSP, and it had, like the 2FX, it had I/O ports, I think processors and stuff. It was a very cool machine for its time. And fully AV compatible for the first Apple.
You know, it's kind of funny. One of the things that we were talking about before we started this discussion was audio and video. And I'm wearing a pair of headphones right now that cost more than all of the machines that we've talked about so far put together. I just started reviewing the HD650 from Sennheiser. They're $599 pair of headphones. I'm talking to you guys on Skype with them right now. And so far, so good. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to keep them. I have to send them back after 30 days when my evaluation period's over. But headphones is one of those things that, you know, if you're an iPod user, a lot of iPod users, they stick with the headphones that came with the iPod, the little earbuds. And it's amazing to me how many people think that's just good enough. You know, you spend a couple $100 for this music player, and you're using essentially a $10 pair of headphones.
There's a nickname for them out here. They're called theft flags.
Yes, I can see that.
Because on BART, which is for people who don't know about San Francisco Bay Area, that's the train system that goes around the Bay Area. People see them as if you see someone with a white earbuds, you know they have an iPod, and people will snag iPods and then run off the train as the doors are closing. And people have stolen a lot.
You should tell me that I know what was there.
Yeah, it's happened quite a few times. In fact, we were at a park the other day, and a woman was jogging around the lake, and some guy on a bicycle came by and snatched her iPod off her arm.
Wow.
I mean, she said, well, I guess I should get rid of those white earbuds because it tells everybody I've got an iPod.
Well, that, and it's on her arm.
In this case, it was on her arm, but it was faced inward. You really couldn't tell what she was running with. But
yeah. No, I think that the headphones, granted for a lot of people, they're probably just fine. But for me, I think the Apple earbuds sound horrible. I mean, it does not reproduce the sound very well compared to even a moderately priced third-party pair of headphones.
Yeah, I was pretty happy when I saw a lot of I switched over all my iPod stuff to my iPhone now. And I found the Vmota headset that has the microphone built in. So.
Yep.
I had to find something that could take advantage of the built-in microphone and also fit into the iPhone headphone slot.
That's the problem I'm running into. A lot of the headphones that I've been reviewing recently, none of them have been posted yet, but I've got four different pair of headphones that I'm doing reviews for, and none of them are iPhone compatible. And my initial reaction to that was, well, I'm going to have to mark it down for that. But then I started thinking, well, why did Apple make these headphones longer than necessary? Was it only because of the built-in microphone? And why couldn't they have made it more compatible with other headphones so you can use any headphones with them, you just don't get the microphone?
You're talking about that long plug?
Yeah, the long plug. You have to get an adapter for any of these headphones that I'm using now to work with the iPhone.
Because I think the mic, I think it's the same problem that the old computers had since we were talking about that. The mics were powered. So they did these long plugs that reached way back into the power, and they do that so that you don't apply power to a regular pair of headphones. You just stick it in the hole.
Well,
but the idea is to protect the standard devices that don't need that power from getting power across them.
Yeah, but you can't use a regular pair of headphones with them on.
Oh, you mean standard headphones won't even work for the audio?
No, it doesn't plug in far
enough.
That's
a mistake.
That's a huge mistake. And there's a lot of companies making little, you know, $10, $15, $20 adapters that you plug a regular pair of headphones in, then you plug it into the iPhone.
That's like my Trio has the Ultra Mini connector on the bottom, so you have to have an adapter for everything on that too.
Yeah. But you know, a lot of people are going to ask me, should I spend $600 for a pair of headphones? And for 99% of the people out there, I say no. You don't want to spend this much money. But I will say, after a half hour of listening to these, and David asked a good question, was, do you hear artifact in your music with stuff that's like in the MP3 format? And yeah, you do if it's, you know, encoded at a very low bit rate. But the lossless file format stuff sounds great, and I really haven't heard a pair of headphones that sound this good in a long, long time. In fact, Owen mentioned costs, and that was probably the last pair of, you know, $400 headphones I bought before I got married and before I had kids. And at the same time that I bought my home speaker system, which I can never replace because they cost too much, and anything I can afford now is not going to sound as good.
David, to answer your question, I tested a pair of those Shure very expensive headphones as well. And I found on all my MP3s, that were not recorded, that were recorded anything under like 160. Yeah. You know, I put a cheap pair of cheap headphones on, I wouldn't hear any of that artifacting at all. Then I put a very good pair of headphones on and all my music sounded like crap.
Yep.
And I ended up having to go to the lossless stuff, or at least to 192, you know, on the bit encoding to get, and I'm in the frequency response and bit encoding up high to get rid of the noise. It would sound choppy.
Yep, it does.
Yeah, it's a pro and con of good headphones.
Everything I import into the computer now, and it's usually stuff that the kids bring a CD, because I don't buy CDs anymore. I buy all my music online. Everything that they're bringing in, I import it at 256 now.
Right.
Hard drives are so large now, who cares?
That's it. Hard drives are
large. The problem is that the problem is that so much of modern music has been, you know, produced in such a way, it's also heavily compressed, that all the audio sort of mashes together anyway. It's actually designed to be listened on cheap headphones. And
that's my worry, but how much of the new music is really designed for the iPod generation. So you're not getting the mixes, say, a Peter Frampton album that is just meticulous in the studio, that they just reproduce these sounds on the master recordings, and that's what you get on the LP. It just sounds so good. You can hear the people playing ping pong from two doors away from the studio when he was recording his vocals. I mean, you're not getting that anymore.
Yeah, and I just read today. Was it today it came out, or was it yesterday? That 48% of the teenagers didn't buy a single CD in 2007. Yeah.
Well, I think that kind of correlates into the other big news item this week, is that the iTunes Music Store is now the number two music retailer in the United States.
Is Walmart still number one?
Yes, but they passed Best Buy to become number two.
And somebody said, what was the album just recently that was sold only electronically except in Walmarts?
I don't know.
Walmart got the only physical CD to be distributed. Everybody else, the only other distribution was electronic. And I'm trying to remember, was it a new... I'm going to go look it up.
Was it Radiohead?
I know they did their
might have been
album.
The Eagles. It might have been
Eagles.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep, and Walmart.
Eagles CD.
Yep.
Only Walmart, right? I think it's now available, but for the first months, it was only available as a CD at Walmart.
Yeah, but a lot of
they didn't sell a lot of them either. I would imagine.
And I read today a lot of people are counting on Apple to be number one, I mean, in a relatively short period of time, because downloads are increasing like by 50% and CD sales are decreasing by 20%.
When's the last time you saw anybody wearing a cassette tape? You know, like a Walkman.
It's funny. I have a whole drawer of cassettes and I keep staring at them going, do I just pick them up and throw them away, or do I try to get some of the stuff on them I want, you know?
Well, how much stuff is on there that you can't get anywhere else, though?
That's what I don't know. I mean, it's a whole bunch of things. A lot of it's stuff I recorded like off the radio, or, you know, my own mixtapes when I borrowed CDs from people and stuff like that. Did I say I copied music?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I used to make mixtapes for people all the time. I called them Bob tapes, bunch of bull something. and I would number them, and I got up to like number 75, and I was making these for all my friends and friends and, you know, stuff like that. But I would make my own too, probably more for myself than anybody else. And most of it was, you know, I had a dual cassette player, so I would record the song from one cassette to the other. And that's what I always listened to in my car, because I didn't want to take the original cassettes with me. I wanted to make sure that those were protected. And usually when you bought an album, at least back in the 80s, there was only like two or three good songs on the entire album, and the rest is like,
it's still like that now.
It is, unfortunately.
Think about it. That's the whole music model that has broken now. You know, let's move to music since we were going to talk there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written about this a couple of times. There's this whole argument that downloading has ruined the music industry. And
no, it's put it back in the 50s where the single
the single, exactly.
The king.
You know, people used to have to get a song. People used to have to buy a whole CD. And I can't tell you how many CDs I've bought where there's only been two or three good songs on it. And I think downloading has done two things to ruin CD sales. One is you can buy just the song you want.
Yep.
But two is you can now sample the music before you buy it and realize you don't want to buy the whole CD. And that has killed CD sales.
Yep, I agree. But I think it's actually good for the music industry and definitely good for the consumers in the long run. Don't you agree, Lee?
Yeah, it's one of those things. I look at it on the cable TV side too. Right now, if you sign up for cable, you're going to get, you know, 200 channels, and you probably only watch maybe 30 or 40. I think that model is going to probably go away too in the next couple of years.
It's going to be more a la carte.
Yeah,
we should talk about that sometime. I'm hoping not. I think
really?
You'll have – yeah, because – so remember where I made my living for too many years
right.
in and around cable.
So do you think it's the discovery of new stuff that you've been getting for free – well, not for free, but that's part of your cable package that you never would have found if you had an a la carte, I want this, and nothing else?
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part
of it.
People,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Please. Wait, no, I was going to let you go first.
No, I was just saying a lot of people think a la carte, well, you know, the chances of you, anybody creating a new station or a new cable channel would just be remote if you
had
a la carte.
The problem is, if you look at the way, and is AOL still part of Warner?
Yeah.
You probably know this, right? If you look at what it costs to put a cable channel on, the way a lot of these smaller channels have been supported, like let's take one at the top of my head, and no offense here, David, but BBC America is not a popular channel. I happen to love it, but it has a low take rate. And if it goes a la carte, instead of being included in your system, it would probably be about a $15 a month charge. No one's going to take it.
Yeah,
okay? And that's what's going to happen.
BBC America is kind of an unusual case because the model that generates BBC America is not the same as that for other channels.
Okay, another one.
Yeah.
Let's take CNN or Headline News, okay? They cost the cable company about 20 cents a subscriber to keep, but if you had to take them a la carte, you'd probably have to pay $4 or $5 for them, okay? But it's the smaller ones, the ones that people don't watch History Channel is not a huge requested channel, but people watch it because it's there. It's going to be $8 to $10 a month, okay? So you're still going to end up spending $100 for the channels you want, but the channels individually are going to be a lot more expensive. Right now, they get a dime a subscriber, so they get enough money to keep going. Those channels will disappear.
Yeah, like Discovery Channel would never have been popular if they were on a la carte.
That's true.
Would have paid for that directly. And I think you'll lose a lot of these channels that are paid for out of every subscriber paying a dime. Those things will go away. They'll just die. And so, yeah, you'll be able to do a la carte, but you'll only have 100 channels to choose from. You won't have 300 channels to choose from.
But don't you think the distribution channel that is the internet is going to kind of usher in a whole new paradigm of content that we consume and the way we consume it, not necessarily through your cable, if you will. It's going to come through your internet, going through your Apple TV or some other similar device, and then you're going to watch it on your television that way.
Eventually. But I think the problem is that look how long it's taken the music industry to move to a down, and they're still not quite grabbed their head around the fact that it's a download market now sent through the internet. They're still struggling with how do we keep the old market with CDs. Television is a broadcast medium, and until someone realizes it's a video on demand medium and that's really the way you want to go, and that's just been slow. You know how many times I've tried to make it work? You know, I mean, I have several machines I've built and helped build that were all based on internet-based television, which I think is the right answer in the long run.
Yeah.
You pay, but here's my concern with that. It's $1.99 to watch an episode of a TV show on iTunes. That means it's $40, for a series of TV. And if you watch four or five series, you spend $1,000 a season on TV. I'm not sure that's the right answer either. It's got to get down to 15, 20 cents, 30 cents before it starts making sense to compete with broadcast, advertiser supported television.
And I also don't
the price today. That's the price today, but that will change. I mean, it's baby steps at the moment. It's just really.
It's got,
I mean, you've got to remember when those deals were set up, people weren't even sure whether anybody would pay anything for TV shows. And it's turned out that iTunes is actually massively successful for TV downloads.
I also think that the problem is that the infrastructure for delivering digital content is still, at least in the United States, is so antiquated.
Absolutely.
And that these companies are not going to spend the money to update everybody to fiber. And if you're in a big city like you, Owen, in San Francisco, sure, you've got multiple choices, but...
I know.
Well, but
I didn't get a cable modem until – the chance to get a cable modem until about 2-3 years ago, and I just this year got the right to buy DSL. I live in a large city. DSL didn't come to my house until this year.
Now, imagine that in the wilds of where I live, Michigan.
Yeah.
Where I'm at, I actually got a cable modem in 1999, which was way ahead of the curve, which was amazing to me at the time. But if you get in my car and you drive for 10 minutes, you can't get any high speed, including DSL. You can't get anything out there. So, I mean, that infrastructure still has a long ways to go. And who's going to pay for that unless the government's going to subsidize the cable companies and the telephone companies to upgrade to fiber? It's just not going to happen.
Tim, let me tell you about it. The office of the new company that I'm helping start is in an area called Saratoga. For those people who know California, it's a very expensive town in Silicon Valley. Saratoga, California. It's very high end. We cannot get broadband in our office.
So do you think that the problem is going to resolve itself with wireless technology, with cellular-like technology, or do you think that we still need the fiber run to the house? I think it's going to be wireless eventually.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be wireless. If you guys took a look this week also, the Japanese launched a satellite that's going to be able to do wireless at gigabits.
And that's what it's going to take, because I think it's going to cost a whole lot less money to launch and maintain a satellite than run fiber to every single house
I don't buy it. I don't buy the argument. So that's gigabits total over a couple million people all wanting to get online. You're back down into kilobits per user. You're not going to watch TV over it.
Yeah,
okay? That's the problem.
Especially geosynchronous.
Well, let's take AT&T as an example. They're putting out something called UVerse. UVerse is a true video on demand system. It's called Switch Digital Video. It's something that I've heard talked about. They send you only the channel you watch at the time across a digital subscriber line that's set to about 50 megabits per second, and it's just barely working. So that sort of sets where it has to be. And if it's got to be HD, think about an HD signal today at 1080p is 20 megabits per second. That's a reasonably encoded, compressed HD signal. Maybe 18 today if the technology is getting better. You're not going to get that from a satellite for every viewer or from a wireless network from every viewer.
Yeah,
I think the other problem as well is that it's not just the delivery to the end user that needs to be upgraded. All the backhaul, the connection points, from the local for DSL or for the cable companies for cable modems or for wireless, that all needs to be upgraded as well, because that's where you're going to get a bottleneck. If you've got 20, 30 megabits to each user, then you need many, many terabits and
do the math
to go back to the backhaul. And that's, here in the UK, this is the problem that is starting to be understood here now. People are complaining that across the UK, the broadband is not as good as it is over in Europe on the continent. The infrastructure just can't really quick enough to actually provide 20, 30 megabits per user to the number of people who want it on this island.
Exactly.
And that's going to need to happen as well even fiber is not going to help that. All fiber does is move the bottleneck away from the curbside outside to your local provider.
Yeah, we agree 100%.
So what do you guys think the answer is going to be, though? Do you think it's going to be, I have to go with wireless. I just don't see even government-subsidized broadband adoption isn't going to happen soon enough, and I think it's going to be antiquated by the time it does.
I think it's going to be wired. I really do. I think you're going to see cable companies have plenty of bandwidth to get at least the minimal amount of broadband speeds of 20, as you're seeing in cable modems today, 15 to 20 megabits per second are doable if we take in what David was saying, that the backbones connect upgrade to handle it. And I think they're going to see wireline subscribers going up. AT&T is running fiber in neighborhoods as fast as they can get it out there, as is Verizon. Didn't you say, Lee, you're on fiber to the home now?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to get fiber service here. I have all television over fiber, but I've been lucky enough in my career. I got to work for one of the leading satellite companies, so we did multimedia over satellite, and it was Loral Space Systems. And I also was able to work at Roadrunner, and I could see kind of both sides of wired versus wireless. But I don't know. I see the just the total infrastructure cost for cable companies to upgrade metro rings and backbones, and it's a pretty expensive proposition. And if they can't bundle it with television and telephone, it becomes a pretty expensive investment.
It is expensive.
But this new satellite, I saw the Japanese launch. They're promising 155 megabits downstream and 6 megabits upstream. But
the latency is going to be awful.
Yeah, the people don't understand. You can't go faster than the speed of light. So you always have that 250 millisecond latency from your home back up to the satellite.
And back down, and then back from where you're going up to the satellite, back to your home. Remember, it's four hops.
And we couldn't do what we're doing right now. We couldn't have a Skype conversation over a satellite.
No, we couldn't. No. There would be way too much latency.
Yeah.
Believe me, we've tried it.
And what I'd expect to see as well is that video on demand won't be quite what we expect it to be. It won't be instant. You know, you literally pick up the remote, press a button, and immediately get the program coming down. There's always going to be a lag because the network's always going to have to cache it locally to you. So I would imagine that the broadcast will still have a place where you actually go through and you select what source of content you want, but then your program to go and get it for you, and it down for you automatically, you know, not at, necessarily at streaming speed.
So,
you know,
David, you'll always David, there are caching technologies that get around that. I have a box in my house right now from a company called Vudu, V-U-D-U, that they basically cache a percentage of the movie on the hard drive internally, and then they calculate your speed, and if you have enough, and they said DSL is usually enough, you can say start, and it starts from the cache, and while it's doing that, it's backfilling the movie, and it's interesting to watch as you play it. They show you what's available, and you can see it filling up in front of you. You can't fast forward to the middle of the movie, but you can fast forward and rewind to the part that's been cached, that's been downloaded already, and you're going to see a lot of stuff like that. Dish Network does one now where in the background, if you have a PVR, they download information to your set-top box in the background, and then it's available there. The popular movies are like that. The non-popular, just like you say, you request them on the Internet, and they download them over the broadband or over the satellite, and they're there when you want them, you know, an hour or two later. Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
The other thing as well is that Sorry, Tim. The other thing I think is that, you know, I mean, if you look at how TiVo works, the fact that it records stuff for you that's similar, I think you'll see that sort of technology as well. So if it knows you're a sci-fi fan, it will catch all the sci-fi for you, and then you choose whether you want to watch it or not.
A couple of weeks ago, John Nemo had an interview with a lady who was having major problems with her Mac and with AppleCare. We've got a part two, a follow-up to that. We're going to play that, and then we'll be right back.
2 weeks ago on the MyMac.com podcast, we encountered a woman who had been a switcher, and she was doing creative work on her MacBook Pro, and the MacBook Pro turned out to be problematic. Well, we have an update. In the 2 weeks since that interview, she has been back to the Apple Store, and now she's back on our podcast. Nice to meet you again.
Hello, it's good to be back.
Do you have anything interesting to report to us? You were about to take your computer in, and if it was going to be the second or the third serious repair, you were hoping they would give you a new computer. What's the update?
Well, the update is that it was the second major repair that they were doing, and partway through it, they realized that there was another part, a major part, something with an LCD light of some kind, that was also problematic. And so they knew they'd have to order another part. And so they said they were going to bypass ordering that part and putting that part in because that would be the third major repair, and they would just give me a new computer, which they did.
Right on the spot?
I was on the phone with them, and they said, let us have a little bit of time to reload it and put all your data and everything back on it, and then you can come and pick it up. They kept saying to me that they were going to call me as soon as they knew something. But they didn't. I had to call them to find out where it was because originally they said they hoped that they would be able to fix it in one day. So I kept calling back to find out if it was done.
Well, is your sense that their ability to call back is somehow not as good as it could be?
Every time you talk to someone on the phone or every time you go in, you talk to someone different and have to start at square one. So it's just like it's the very first time you're taking in the computer or taking in the problem. It's like starting all over every time you go in.
So is this an inherent problem either in this particular Apple store or within the whole Apple tech support system?
I don't know, but it certainly is a problem because there's very little. That's the one thing I learned with this. There's just no communication within the workers that are there. They don't communicate with one another to relay messages that you have either left or called about or something. They don't communicate with each other. Woman that I had talked to on the phone never transferred that information saying this, we've had difficulty with this woman. We've had difficulty with this computer. Please be sure it's done because she's coming in at 10 o'clock. That was never done.
So if we can separate their communication ability or lack of, internal, external, if we just put their communication skills sort of over here on the side.
Right.
And we put their technical prowess over here on the other side. And we say they've got sort of like a D quality as far as their communication skills.
Yes.
They're barely passing. On the technical side, are they any better than on the communication side?
Well, technically, yes. I mean, eventually, if you have the strength to hold out long enough, I think eventually they'll get it right. But again, what happens is every time you go in with a technical problem and they do a small fix or they try to do a fix or something with it, unless you ask them to note it in your record, the next person you talk to has no idea what the problem was when you came in or what was done to it by one of the techs. So although they might have tried something, and maybe they had two choices to try something, but it wasn't noted, and you as a layman don't know what to say to them was done to it. The last time you came in, all you know is that whatever it was that was done didn't work, but there's no notation.
Do they give you a report, like when you take your car in, what they did to work on the computer?
No.
And do you get to actually physically meet the person who's working on your computer, the technician?
No. I ended up meeting the head. It was the head technician that I was talking to. And every time I called, I would have to say to them, I have been dealing with this particular person who's head of your tech support system in the back, and he knows everything about this, so that they would go to directly to him. If I hadn't gotten his name, I would have had no idea.
So it's not just somebody with 15 computers piled up. They actually have a staff in the back, just like they have that enormous staff in the front.
I think so. And they probably, like everybody, put things in some kind of prioritized order, depending upon who brings it in or when you bring it in and whether the parts are there or they're waiting for parts or, you know, whatever. I never took it in until they called me. They did call me and say, the parts we ordered are in. And that's when I called them and said, I will bring it in now.
Okay. So now if we can compartmentalize both the tech support and the communications or lack of.
Right.
At the end of the day, what did you walk out of the store with?
A brand new computer.
It'd never been used before.
Correct. And it's an upgrade. I said to him, is this comparable to my other computer? And he said, it's an upgrade. I think because my other computer is almost 2 years old.
What we have now, and I'm looking at it, is the MacBook Pro. And you had the very original MacBook Pro. You had bought the upgrade of the original with the higher memory. But this particular MacBook Pro is the Intel Core 2 Duo MacBook Pro with 2 gigabytes of RAM. And so that is the upgrade, and the way I can tell it's the upgrade, even without looking at the About This Mac in the Blue Apple, we'll talk about that in a minute, is over on the right side, there is a FireWire 800 port in addition to the FireWire 400 port. This doesn't mean anything to you, because you've only used FireWire 400. But I can tell immediately from looking at it that it's the upgrade, because the original model did not have that FireWire 800 port. Which one day, well, you'll be glad you have that. It's nice to have that second FireWire port. What improvements do you notice on the new computer? Can you tell in any way that it's different from the original one, aside from that extra FireWire port?
As a layman, the only thing that I can really tell is that it seems to be much faster and the screen is brighter.
The screen is definitely brighter.
The screen is much brighter.
And the computer is definitely going to be zippier.
Mm-hmm.
How about the keys or the mouse? Anything there?
The keys seem to be a little tighter, like, you know, they're not as loose from typing on them as much.
Uh-huh. Now, what about the operating system? I do see a Blue Apple. So why didn't they put Leopard, which is 10.5, on, and why did they give you the Blue Apple, which is 10.4? Which is the Tiger system.
Well, what they said was that they asked whether or not I had the one-on-one package, and I do. And they said, you should really come in and have someone take you through the new program to see whether or not you like that, and because it's going to change the configuration of some of the things you already have. So that was a very good decision they made. Instead of just doing it without asking me, they said they would do it at any time just to let them know, but they thought I should come in for the one-on-one first to find out whether or not it was something, in fact, I did want to do. They wasted a tremendous amount of their time, of their employees, on this particular problem. And they wasted a lot of money because they did give me printouts a couple times of the parts that they ordered, and the parts were adding up to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. They probably should have cut their losses with this computer, you know, a year ago and just let it, you know, and given me a new one then. Not that that was what I was after. It was not after a new computer. Even to this day, I would have preferred my old computer if it had worked and I hadn't had all these problems. But having said that, what I would say to them is that they should make notations every time someone comes in so that they don't have to start at ground zero, especially when it's the same computer that keeps coming back. And also that they need to work better on communications within their employees to each other because they waste a lot of time of their own and a lot of money of the businesses.
If we had had a fantastic independent Apple Technical Service Center like First Tech in Minnesota, which is so highly regarded, would you have preferred to go to a private independent tech repair center as opposed to Apple? Given that choice?
You know, I didn't know that one existed. I think I would want to find out whether or not they were, you know, really reputable and if the warranties and guarantees and all that were covered and you could talk to the same person every time you went in, that would certainly be a benefit. I don't know whether or not those stores would have the new equipment and if you were looking for parts or pieces or new equipment for your machine, if it would be as good. But if you're just doing technical support and having a problem with the workings of the computer, then maybe that would definitely be an alternative.
We wish you all the best, and please bring us up to date as your new computer gets restored with all of your old data, and we hope that you're happy again as a new switcher to Macintosh and again supporting us here on the MyMac.com podcast. Any parting words for our listeners?
No, you're a great interviewer. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
And we're back here with, we lost David Cohen. The packet loss was just too great going to the UK and back to the States. So we're still left with Owen and Lee. So guys.
Left with.
That kind of came out wrong, didn't it? Yeah. That's
I'm getting a little, just us.
It's just these guys. Oh, man. So you guys both have big computer collections. I've got, I don't know, probably 15 Macs here. But I feel, you know, I always thought I had a lot until I started talking to you two.
Well, it's like, scary as I find more much. And more of them. It's starting to scare me here.
Well, you know what? I've been collecting for a few years now. And this is actually how I found Owen was video game console systems and video games themselves. That's always been the big thing that I collected, but you know, there's just not that many out there. So it's once you get most of the main systems, there's not really a whole lot left to get. I mean, I've
what
got the
missing?
Colecos and, boy, I can't think of anything that
you
I'm.
You have
really
a 5200?
Yep, I sure do. No, I don't. I had a 5200, but it wasn't accepting cartridges. It was bad, so I tossed it.
Hey, you know, Tim. You know, Tim. What I have is kind of interesting. I have a full Pippin set.
Do you really?
You have a full Pippin set.
I got
how'd
everything.
You get that?
Well, I was on the internet one time. Some guy spelled Pippin incorrectly on eBay.
Mm. Oh, and no one bid on it.
And nobody bid on it. I'm not joking. I got the full Pippin. I got a Pippin that's almost brand new. I got all the software. I got the remember the keyboard?
Yep.
Yeah.
I got the full Pippin set and only paid maybe $150 for it.
Well, that's a good price for a Pippin. That's actually one item that I used to check when I actually could bid on eBay. And I can't now, but I won't talk about that on the show. Jerks. that's one item that I never found an active sale for, was a Pippin. Yeah, and I would check probably once every 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I got the Pippin modem, too. I remember actually when I was at...
That was the big selling point for the Pippin, was the modem at the time.
Yeah, it's weird. There's two Pippins. I think there's one that was in white and the other one was in charcoal, so I have the charcoal one.
I forgot all about that.
What, the Pippin?
Yeah, I just completely forgot all about that.
Now, you know, the rumors are flying that eventually Apple's going to get back into gaming and that the iPod games are kind of their track back into it. Do you guys think Apple's going to do anything like that in the future?
Yes, especially since they were looking for someone to manage the Apple Games group.
But that was the understanding that I had of that was the Apple Games group as far as gaming on the iPod.
they didn't say. They just said they were looking for the executive to run the games group. I didn't get a call back. They didn't care about me.
I just figured
15 years of video game design and 8 years of or 7 years of Macintosh design, I'd probably fit into that group. But
they figure you're jaded.
I'm too old.
What do you think, Lee? You think Apple's going to get back into gaming?
Well, I think the traditional gaming market, consoles and PC gaming, is kind of saturated. And you look at EA; they're trying to buy Take-Two, and they're going to be consolidating their power. I think Apple sees a big opportunity.
Take-Two said no.
Yeah. And I said,
well, they got Grand Theft Auto 4 coming out. They're going to be worth a lot more money very quickly.
Yeah, you always turn down the first offer.
EA or Take-Two?
Take-Two.
Yeah, EA's trying to buy them, right?
Yeah.
Well, they tried, and the board of directors for Take-Two said no, that they weren't offering enough money, and weren't interested. But, I mean, they're going to have probably the biggest selling game of the year coming out in April, and that's Grand Theft Auto 4.
But I think Apple sees a big opportunity in iPod Touch, iPhone, and iPod games.
Don't you think that the iPod Touch and the iPhone is perfect gaming platform?
Yes.
Yeah, my kids play a lot of games.
It's a little small. It needs a control is the problem, right?
Well, I don't know. You say it's kind of small, but the screen's a lot bigger than a DS, and the DS is killing everything.
I guess you're right.
In sales.
Dude. Is the DS is a touchscreen or does it have controls?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It has both. It has dual screens.
I was trying to picture out how I would play a game. You know, I always wonder. There was a guy who used to ride BART with me who had a Trio like mine did, and he played games every day. I always see him on the BART train playing games. And then one day I looked at the front of his Trio, and the screen was all scratched up where he was scratching when he's playing these games. And I'm just picturing, you know, what happens to the touch screen after a while when you're constantly rubbing and playing and touching on it with your fingers.
Yeah, but the Trio was a plastic screen. The iPhone and the iTouch are glass screens.
Glass. Yeah, that may make a big difference.
I think it would make a huge difference. I think the problem for me as a video game player myself is the tactile sensation of pushing a button,
right,
which I think I would definitely miss on the iPhone or the iTouch. I do play a few iPod games. I actually buy most of the games that come out for them. I'm like five behind as far as actually playing any of these $5.99 games that I keep buying on the iTunes store because the screen is just so small for me. It really is. And I keep thinking, wow, this would be kind of a fun game on the iPhone. But then I think, yeah, but I don't have that tactile sensation. I think the iPod itself, really, other than, what is that, Peggle? Peggle was the only game that I've ever played on the iPod that was actually a fun game and it worked well on the iPod. But then I did the demo for the Mac and it was 10 times better on the Mac. But still, I think that the round wheel is absolutely horrible for gaming, and
yes.
I don't know if a flat screen is going to be any better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Missile Command would be a great game on the iPhone because you can in the iTouch.
There you go.
Because you know you just touch where you want the thing to launch to. It'd be a great game. But how many of the classic games would you play that way?
You couldn't play Pac-Man.
Pac-Man? Yeah, it's like
maybe he follows your finger around. I don't know.
Touch the way you want him to go. I guess that's.
You know, Tim, sorry about that. I saw something at CES that I thought was kind of interesting. Taking your iPod Touch, your iPhone, and snapping it into a tactile controller.
Yeah, I've seen mock-ups for that before.
Yeah,
it would just plug
idea.
Right into the docking station.
Yeah.
And then hold it, you know, horizontally.
Didn't Macworld have a few products this year where the iPhone docked or the iTouch docked into devices for speakers and screens?
Oh, that's been huge for a long time. But the problem is Apple puts that proprietary chip in there, so you have to pay Apple a good sum of money to make it certified. Otherwise, you can't do it.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to that, I agree. But the nice part to know is if you're certified, you see a device, you know it's going to work, right? There is sort of some Apple security to that, and I don't blame them. You know, think about programming for Nintendo or the PlayStation, you have to get certified by the company to get your game on the console, right? You pay a fee for it. But it guarantees that the game will work right. This guarantees that the object will work right. I don't have a problem with it in general.
And I think,
well, yeah, but you go back into the early days of Activision, and Activision got their start because they broke away. Was it Activision?
Yes.
They broke away from Atari, and they didn't have a license, and their games were the best games for the Atari 2600.
Yeah, they got sued, too.
Yeah, but they also won.
They won that case. They proved that
they didn't need to
reverse engineer anything. So.
Yeah.
Yep. Then Nintendo killed Atari, but you remember you had to buy the cartridges, the blank cartridges from Nintendo?
That's right.
So that kind of killed the...
There was an interesting, strange lawsuit on that one, too, where some guy had reverse-engineered and could make the cartridges and agreed to pay Nintendo the cost of the cartridge, but just allow them to make them themselves. And so, you see, because Nintendo, it was coming into the Christmas rush, and Nintendo said, we can't build enough cartridges. So they're telling distributors of a game that we can't sell all the games you can sell because we can't make enough cartridges. And I believe, if I remember it correctly, I won't mention names, that these guys reverse engineered it, made their own cartridges, and said, okay, we'll make our own cartridges, and we'll pay you just as if we bought them from you. Just let us make them ourselves. And Nintendo said no.
No, they wanted absolute control over that distribution
channel. Absolute control, yeah.
So I think we'll probably all agree that the iPhone and the iPod Touch probably make a decent but limited gaming solution. So do you think Apple would be interested in actually getting into some kind of a new market with a new device that's an iPod, an iPhone, and a PSP type of thing?
Oh,
and at that point, shouldn't they just buy Sony? I mean, at this point, Apple could afford to buy Sony. They'd have to go in debt, but they could do it.
Yeah, I think Sony's market cap's only about $40 billion right now, so they got $18 billion in cash.
Exactly.
Well, maybe they could buy the gaming side of Sony.
No, because that's the only thing that's really making Sony... Well, the flat panel TVs are making some money, but almost everything else Sony's doing right now is losing money. The PS3 is finally starting to make money for them, and so the PS2 is still selling good.
The flat panel stuff Samsung buys, right? Because they did the deal with Samsung now that they have the glasses
not anymore.
Made together.
No, now it's Sharp. Sony's going to Sharp now because they whatever the reason is, they had to drop out with Samsung, and now Sharp's actually making their televisions.
That's strange because Samsung and Sony, I thought, built that facility together.
Yeah, the L7. They had the L7 facility, and then I think I think Tim's right. I just read this week that they're partnering with Sharp now.
Yep,
well,
they're partnering up with Sharp.
Amazing LCD television. I hate to make a plug for anybody, but I own an Aquas, and it's one of the most amazing pictures I've ever seen.
Well, you know, the thing is, Apple, I think, do you think Apple would be interested? I know we're kind of going way off on a tangent, but do you think Apple would be interested in buying Sony? Forget the fact that the Japanese people would probably go up in arms if an American company bought such an iconic company like Sony. But do you think Apple would be interested in buying Sony if you combine those two brands? Do you think that would be something Apple would be interested in? We'll start with Lee.
Well, I think it would be difficult. I think they admire a lot of things Sony does. They admire their design and their products. Steve Jobs has always said that he likes Sony. But I just don't – Sony has such a large, unwieldy business. They have, like, professional you know, cameras. They have decks. Then they have all the entertainment. They have the set-top boxes. They do the content. There's just too many pieces there, I think, that are outside of Apple's core competency.
But, you know, that was the problem with Apple when Steve Jobs came back under Gilamelio and before Michael Spindler. There was just so many products that Apple was trying to support. Steve Jobs come in, chopped almost all of them out, and focused on what was making the most money, and that's why Apple came back.
Yeah, I remember supporting 23 motherboards back then.
Yeah, exactly.
I suspect, though, that you're right, Lee, that, you know, the side of Sony that's broadcast television and production is huge for Sony.
Yeah.
I mean, when I built my digital production facility, every video deck in my unit, you know, was a Sony product, you know.
Absolutely. And but they don't have that cachet anymore.
No.
They do on the broadcast side.
Yeah. On the broadcast side, yes.
Yeah.
How much money does that really make them?
I suspect, we paid a lot of money for decks from Sony. You know, I know damn well that the digital beta decks we bought from them were a lot more than they cost to build, right? Yeah.
So if Sony would be interested in selling the gaming division to Apple, do you think Apple would be interested in that, owning the PlayStation brand? I think
possibly.
Apple would snap that up.
I think Apple would get rid of the content side. They would get rid of professional. They would love to have the consumer division, I think.
I agree with you. But, I mean, maybe a lot of people don't know, go back to the PowerBook 100, it was built by Sony.
Yep.
And Apple realized that they couldn't sell into the Japanese market because the Japanese market typically wants things built in Japan.
Yep.
And
that's
so
why
Sony
Microsoft
was building some of Apple stuff for a short while there, and I suspect they would love to have Sony do that again.
Well, you know, a lot of people were surprised when Microsoft jumped into the video gaming market, and they've done pretty successful now, but it's not selling in Japan. And a lot of people were kind of surprised about that because right now, honestly, being the owner of all three of the new video game consoles, I play probably. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I want a Wii.
You know, the problem with the Wii, the first-party games are decent, but they're not any better graphic or sound-wise than what you would play on the GameCube.
I agree. I know, but the first time my wife has ever said to me, I want a game console. She
that doesn't surprise me.
And said, I want one. You know, and we have this great big projection TV here, you know, this big screen, and we tried playing another game on it. She says, I want a Wii. Get me a Wii.
I can tell you that the only other game my wife ever played was Super Monkey Ball, where you're in the little monkeys are in these balls, and me and the kids and my wife would race. It was a race, and you could shoot missiles at each other and drop bananas and make them skid out. And you went through like five courses, and my wife loved that game.
Kind of like Mario Kart.
Yep, and so then we played it to death back in 2001, 2002. And that was with the kids, that was the big New Year's Eve thing. We'd always play monkey ball for 4 or 5 hours. And I always had to handicap myself, accidentally fall off the side a bunch of times. Otherwise, I would just spank them really bad. Yeah. It was ugly. But lately, the only game my wife who is even remotely interested in playing is Wii Bowling. She loves Wii Bowling. And I will say, it's the best bowling game I've ever played in my life. It's absolutely fantastic.
It's a lot
fantastic.
Of fun. It really is. I agree.
And I got my mom for the first time in my whole life. I'm a big game player, Atari 2600 in the old days. But my mom played Wii Bowling, and I never saw her ever enjoy herself playing a video game. That was the first time.
Yeah, Nintendo really knows what they're doing. I know there was rumors flying about a year and a half ago about is Apple interested in buying Nintendo? I bet they kind of wish they would have now.
Yeah, I think for a little while, Nintendo was the most valuable Japanese company in market cap.
Is that true? Is that right?
Yeah, for a while
they were.
I mean, I don't doubt it. It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But of the three video game consoles, I got to say, the Microsoft Xbox 360 is the worst as far as hardware. It's so noisy and clunky, and it's gone bad on me three times now.
Yes.
But it has the best games.
Because they had the PC to design on, right?
Well, no, it's because they came out almost 2 years ahead of the PS3 and the Wii. The vast majority of Wii games out there are terrible games. Nintendo has absolutely zero quality control over the third-party game market. It's wretched. Almost all of them are just horrible. And the PS3, there's just maybe four games that's worth playing. And I've played them, and there's comparable games other than,
paid no attention to
maybe
that.
Two.
Sorry.
Maybe two games on the PS3 that I can't get for the 360 that's worth playing.
Yeah.
So the 360 right now is clearly the winner as far as games go. But as far as elegant design, the machine just works. It's quiet. It's future-proof. That's the PS3. I mean, it's a Blu-ray player.
Yep. Well, now that Blu-ray has won, I thought about, it's time to buy an HD DVD system. I thought the cheapest way to buy it is the PS3. And then I was reading somewhere that because it has the game system behind it, it has the best hardware rendering engine for the extras on the DVDs as well.
Well, I could tell you, I've bought a couple Blu-ray titles now. The first one I bought was that movie 300.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I watched that, and I've got an older HD set that's not a flat panel. It's like it weighs 400 pounds. but I guarantee you, though, my HD picture is better than most of the HD pictures, even for the brand new sets. Because
you have a CRT?
Yes.
Yeah, the CRT HDs were some of the best video ever.
And it still looks simply fantastic. The problem is I don't have an HDMI plug.
That's
but you watch Blu-ray on that. You watch a Blu-ray disc on that, and it's just amazing.
Well, how do you connect?
It blows from component.
But I was under the impression, and help me if I'm wrong here, that if the copyright bits are set on the HD, that I know this for a fact. The standard for HDMI says if the copyright bit is set on the DVD, and that turns out to
be not turned on.
Then that's one of the few that's not. You might find a lot of DVDs don't work.
You're absolutely right. But
they turn off the analog outputs. And for me, until I bought my Aquas, because my regular TV blew up, I didn't have an HD source I could watch on. My projector is like your machine. It doesn't have a HDMI input.
And that's kind of the tricky part for me. I'm hoping that somebody comes out with a solution that will convert it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, it's HDCP.
The HDCP, the HDMI standard, it will violate that your license to do HDMI if you bypass the copy protection bit with analog.
So Apple's in all these markets now. They're in the living room with the Apple TV, all but barely.
Yep.
I don't even have an Apple TV. I'm kind of getting the feeling that maybe I want one soon, but I just can't imagine myself. Yeah, but there's just not enough there for me to make that investment. Lee, is the Apple TV something that you have or something that you're looking at?
Yeah, I actually have two Apple TVs. It's now probably...
I hate you.
Well, the big
I'm never inviting you on the show
he's
again.
He's got more toys than you and I together now.
I walk in the Apple store all the time, and I'm like, well, you know, when there's a new Apple store opening, I take the family, of course. And yep. I walk in, I'm like, wow, I have everything. So yep. There's, you know, so but the funny thing is, the kids...
So you have an iPhone, you have an iTouch, you have a...
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, I'm disconnecting. He's gone.
Yeah,
the wife's on the iPhone too. But I had a whole bunch of DVDs. The kids would leave like Barbie, Fairytopia laying around, and I'd have to replace these DVDs. So I started putting them all on the Apple TV. Now the kids only use the Apple TV to watch TV.
So you're ripping them on the Mac?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time cleaning them up, getting them, getting the metadata, putting them on the Apple TV, and I find. It's improved things because the kids could find shows really easily, not have to look for the DVD and put them all back. They love it.
So do you pull them off and convert them to AVIs? Is that what you're doing?
Well, I use Handbrake, and I pull them off Handbrake, and I convert them to H.264 so I could play them both on the iPhone, iPod Touch, or the Apple TV.
And it looks good, too.
Yeah, I take a sacrifice a little on the high end because, you know, if you're formatting for the lowest common denominator, you can't go,
right.
You know, bigger.
Well,
than
you make a single file for both of those. You don't make a file for...
Yeah.
You make a single file for both those. All right.
Yeah, I got the Apple TV on HDMI on a HD set, and it looks perfectly fine for me. I mean, I understand some people will probably, you know, some of my friends who are, like, audiophiles will cringe. They don't have 5.1. They don't have, the full HD resolution or 100 kilobits per second. But I find it's perfectly fine for our family.
Especially for the kids stuff. They don't care.
Yeah, I got 161 DVDs on the Apple TV. I got the 160 gig, and I still have a lot of room left.
Wow, that's a lot of content on there. I didn't realize you could put quite so much. But then again, you're encoding it for the smallest common denominator,
right.
Where I would make it a little bit higher quality.
Yeah, each file comes in around.
I'm looking at some of the files I've done for HD, and they come in around 1.5, 1.5 gigabit.
Yeah, I encode right around 1,300 kilobits per second, so my files are about between 500 and 1.3 gigabytes.
What do you do for the little picture? So if you're browsing it, how do you get the DVD cover?
Oh, one of the best programs out there. My friend Bob at work showed it to me. It's called Oh my gosh,
CoverFlow.
No, it's there's a new metadata editing program that Bob showed me. It's called MetaX.
Ah, yes.
MetaX came out. I used to use a whole combination of things. I used to use Lostify, wow. And I used to use Metadata Hootenanny, and then I used to edit the metadata myself, and it was a big pain. But MetaX by itself can do. You could do the poster frame. You could pull from Amazon's web service. It'll pull the DVD cover if you want. It fills in all the metadata information. The biggest problem I have, too, is doing parental controls because, I watch some shows that are, maybe PG-13. So if you use MetaX, you can actually tag your programs so the kids can't – they'll have to put in a code to watch anything above PG.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a very cool program. It says it even has a barcode scanner. Use your EyeSight camera to do the work for you. Scan the DVD barcode and MetaX will search for the tags.
I owe Bob lunch. I mean, it's the best software I've seen in months.
How do you say that? Kerstetter? Kerstetter? That's the name of the site. It says kerstetter.net. A peek into your eye life. That's very interesting.
And he has a little cow in there, and it moves when it's finished, so it's kind of neat.
I was trying to get it to move now, but it won't move without – so I should download this, you're saying.
Yeah, Rodney Kerstetter, he's done a really good job. I mean, when it comes to metadata tagging for MP4 files, the one thing that I have to deal – I spent a decade working with digital video and things like that in QuickTime. One thing I don't understand is Apple does a little different coding and packaging of files when it's a MP4 versus a MOV. So as long as your files are MP4, you could do things like tag the rating. Some metadata fields are not available if it's MOV, even though the content inside is the same.
Yep, I don't know why they do that either. I think it's a problem with iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can actually.
What's the new package now called? It begins with an M. MKW is the packaging now for HD pictures too, and they don't even support that at all.
Yeah.
Not yet. They will eventually. I think once a set standard is reached, but yes. Right now it's just kind of all up in the air. It's kind of like with the RAW camera format. All the camera manufacturers are kind of going with Adobe RAW. Mm-hmm. That's become the de facto standard.
Yeah.
But for a long time, Apple wasn't supporting any of it because every single camera manufacturer was using their own RAW standards. So.
Right. Yeah, and Apple's finally getting around to supporting like widespread formats like AVC HD that's coming out of all the Sony and Canon HD camcorders.
Well, why doesn't Apple support AVI, you think?
Well, I think it's probably...
Granted, there's like 50 good, different codecs out there, but
question,
still.
Good question, since it's sort of becoming the default standard.
Yeah, I use Parian to play back a lot of that kind of content.
Yep, so do I.
But,
Parian? I use
Parian.
VLC. Do you know about VLC?
Oh, I love VLC, made by those French students.
You know what I use now? I use Media Hub. It's a program to just convert everything now over to QuickTime.
Wow.
So we're sort of getting into what we were going to talk about today. And
yeah, absolutely. Well, you know,
Video Hub, is that the one you use?
Visual Hub.
Visual Hub. Visual.
I'm correcting it. Yes, we're talking.
Visual Hub is one of those applications that's well worth the money. I did a review of it maybe a half a year ago.
Oh,
and it will basically convert, and they update it all the time. Every single time I launch that program, there's a new update. Yep. Click here to update, and it launches a new version. It's they keep right on top of everything.
$23.32. What a strange price.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, it's really worth every single one of those pennies, too, because it will convert almost every single video file that I've thrown at it so far.
And it's amazing. It's a really good graphical user interface on top of all those Unix tools.
And I like it if you go in and you try to adjust how you want it to encode something. It has this big button. It lets you do it, but there's this big sign there that says, stop, you'll screw it up.
It's like, do you really want to do that?
Because there was a Windows program called Prism Video Converter I used to use that sounds like very similar to this. I'm wondering if it's the same Unix tools with their own front end.
I don't know. They keep it really updated. I'm actually using...
Well, you're right.
Screen sharing, Visual Hub.
Yeah, Visual Hub is. They just announced support for Apple TV Take Two, the new 5.1 surround.
Yeah, they every single time.
Who did that? Sorry, Visual Hub did.
Yeah.
Yep. It's visualhub.net only.
No, I've just downloaded it.
In fact, I just launched it on the machine upstairs. I'm remote controlling that machine, mm-hmm. and sure enough, there's a new update for it. A new version of Visual Hub is available.
1.31a.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's new in 1.31 Apple TV 5.1 surround sound support.
Yeah.
Videos with 5.1 AC3 audio can now be converted to play on the new Apple TV Take 2.
And Handbrake just upgraded to 0.92 to support 5.1 AC3. But I found out one.
But that's Leopard only.
Yeah, it's Leopard only, and I found out a big problem. Once you convert to AC3 5.1, you can't play it back on iPhone. The iPhone's iPhone's chip won't take it.
But I don't think that's necessarily a problem if it's going to be something that you're going to gear it towards.
Wait, they won't let you
Apple
put
TV.
Both the analog and the digital audio track?
No,
it's supported in the standard.
Well, what's really kind of weird is iTunes is sort of the arbiter of sort of like what content could get on an iPhone. So it looks at it and it goes, ooh, you have an additional text track and you have this AC3 track. We don't know what that is. You can't put it on your iPhone.
So we'll abort instead of trying to just ignore it.
Yeah, it just skips it and actually it just goes right past it.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, it won't even what's happened to me is when I've tried to put video content on the iPhone that it doesn't quite support it. There's something different about it. iTunes will pop up and say, this couldn't be synced to the iPhone. It's not compatible. And it won't even put it on the iPhone.
Yeah, it keeps you from messing up or putting something on there that won't play back, which is
smart. These Visual Hub guys have a great sense of humor, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
I love
that.
It says,
a great
it says
product.
Drag Visual Hub to applications, drag the PDF to your brain.
Yeah.
What's
and it works great.
Back support? What's that? You guys use that with Visual Hub?
What was that?
What is it?
TiVo Go Back support.
Yeah, it's when you want to copy the files from your TiVo over to your Mac.
Yes.
TiVo came out with a program called, what was it called? Yeah, I think you just said it.
Called Toast?
No.
Because Toast
it would actually,
now does that, by the way.
You mean TiVo to go, right?
This is called TiVo Go Back. I have TiVo to go. I have used that. And Toast.
I don't know what that is.
By the way, TiVo. If you have the latest version of Toast, version, I guess it's 8 now, Toast 8, they have built in TiVo support. So you can now, you have TiVo to go and burn DVDs of your TiVo programs.
So you
make a DVD and carry your TiVo programs anywhere, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, TiVo is promoting that right on their website, Roxio Toast 8 or
Roxio Toast. Yeah, they set a deal with them just recently. So you can watch it on any Mac, except the Air, of course, because you don't have an optical drive.
Yeah.
Hang on.
So Lee, how many videos do you actually watch on your iPhone?
I usually carry around like one or two movies. After I saw I Am Legend, I went out and purchased the old Omega Man.
Uh-huh.
And I just go I usually drop one or two movies on the iPhone in case, you know, I'm driving around, the kids are falling asleep in the back of the car or something like that. Yeah, usually I carry around two and maybe two or three shows and of course the Onion podcast, a video podcast. Yeah.
The only thing that I really put on the iPhone, I kind of wish I had a 16 gig for this reason, because I really limit myself on what videos I put on there. But I keep a couple family videos on there, and that's about it. Something that I'm going to watch more than once or I want to show somebody.
Yeah, so I've had Ratatouille on there for a couple weeks now.
Not owning an iPhone. I have a Palm Trio, and I do have movies on there, because missing from the iPhone, which has got to be added eventually, is this little SD card slot on my phone that hold 4 gigabyte cards. So I put videos on them. I plug them in. I have another card that I swap with it. So I swap movies all the time. So they have a video player
But you use iTunes to sync your phone, and that's where it's a much more convenient application to control your movies.
We agree 100%. Why the iPhone doesn't have a card drives me crazy.
I don't think they need a card, nor do I really want them to have one.
Why? That way you can swap your movies in and out when you're traveling, so you don't have to worry about which ones you carry.
Maybe.
I usually have my MacBook with me when I'm traveling all the way. So.
Same with me, and that's got a much larger hard drive. I'm kind of with Lee on that.
I'm on an airplane. The last thing I want to do is take down my computer, plug in two wires, and transfer over a new video, because I've watched the four that are on there. I reach in my pocket, pull out the little tiny SD card. I got new content. To me,
How long is the flight that you're on that you're going to go through four movies?
Well, my last flight to Australia was a real long one. Three batteries, too. Wow. No, but sometimes I just don't remember to carry, or I don't want to hook it up, but.
Yeah.
I like the little card. I like to be able to swap content fast.
Well, but the difference is, though, between a Trio and an iPhone is that when you want to charge your iPhone, you plug it into the computer.
I charge it in the computer. I plug it into the computer.
Yeah, but you don't control any of the data that's on there because of the computer, do you? I'm talking about music, your playlists, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, but not through iTunes, unfortunately.
Right. See, to me, what an iPod and what an iPhone is, less so than the iPhone, it's just your iTunes to go.
It's a portable extension.
You're saying why the iPod was successful in the first place. Everybody in their world has tried to do an MP3 player, and they weren't successful with it. But Apple created an end-to-end solution, all the way from buying the music to synchronizing seamlessly, making it simple. That's why it was successful. That's why no one else got it right. You know, Apple figured it out. They made it simple.
Mm-hmm. The other aspect of that is you're carrying a lot more little tiny cards with you all the time, and I would rather not do that, because I lose SD cards all the
time.
They
are easy to lose, yes.
They are. Well, I think we're going to wrap up the show this week. Lee, I want to thank you a lot for coming on 2 weeks in a row. Obviously, last week was kind of an interview show. We had so much fun with you. It was good to have you on as not the AOL guy, but just as the Mac guy that uses the same computers that we do, have a lot of the same interests. I'm very jealous about your collection. I'm going to have to step it up and try to catch you. No, I'm not going to do that. And Owen, thanks very much for you coming on this week, too.
Thank you for having me here again. We have to bring Lee back when we're talking about codecs. Sounds like he knows that.
Absolutely. Lee, I'd like to have you on more often than not. Just kind of consider you maybe one of our new co-hosts.
Definitely. I'd love to be on anytime you guys are talking, especially video. It's been my passion. You know, like I was talking to Owen before, I've kind of geared my whole life to that's the reason why I think I'm on a Mac, because of the video support.
You and me both.
A lot of people came through that. I came through as a writing, really, and getting the kids involved in computers, knowing that they're going to have to use them a lot more. That was the excuse at the time anyways. The kids are going to have to use them a lot more than we ever will, honey. We should buy one. Yeah, that worked out really well, didn't it? So, but anyways, that's the show this week. We'll be back next week. Let me check the schedule real quick here because, yes, we have Mariner Software next week. That should be interesting. They make some really good products. They've been doing a Word application for years and years, word processing.
This is right.
Yep.
What's it called?
No, Mariner Soft.
Oh, Mariner Soft. Yeah.
Yeah, they've been around for a long time. And, you know,
you mean an alternative to using Microsoft? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, you know, let's not talk about Microsoft Word right now because I'm really not pleased with them. But
I've been playing with it, by the way. It arrived.
And, so you did get it.
I did get it, and I understand your frustration.
Yeah, it seems to me it's a product that was released a little early.
Well,
I
think I installed
it needed a little bit more time
user.
In the Easy Bake Oven.
I got scared, so I created a new user on my machine and installed it for that user only. Just because I was afraid after hearing what you said that it was a little early. But, you know, March is coming. They got a major update. Hopefully they will fix some things.
That's what their PR people
I mean, they only had
well.
4 years. Let's give them a break.
It's not like they had to reroute it from the ground up like AOL or anything.
Exactly. 4 years. That's enough time.
That's right. Thanks, guys, for coming on this week.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.